We had a fabulous day yesterday. Hands up who were at the first Back to Yoga picnic yesterday. Oh, eat your heart out if you weren't there. You can get to the next one. We're planning maybe towards the end of next month, or middle to end of next month, the Back to Yoga trek come picnic. So we're going to plan a trek for those that want to go trekking, and we'll have a program for the children, maybe where we're going to have the picnic later on. So there'll be activities for the kids that might not want to go trekking, especially young, real young kids. So the trekkers can go off and do a good trek, come back a couple hours later, and then we can all get together and have some games and picnic and so on. Weather depending, we don't know. But yeah, that's kind of planned. There was about 75 to 80 people counted yesterday, so it was really fabulous. It was a great day. We started, I think the first people got down there around 8:30, one or two brave souls, and we didn't finish till about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, it was pretty good. That was something I wanted to mention. That what is attractive in life is relationships. And relationships breed or bring us into community. And more or less everyone wants to live in a nice environment, a happy environment, environment of support. And that's not very easy to find. I don't know if you have had trouble finding it. But it's not an easy thing to find real relationships, an environment of support and inspiration. So unless we can develop that environment, we are not so attracted. We are attracted to such things. One of our swamis, one of the leaders of Bhakti Yoga, Krishna Consciousness, he expressed like that, that we have to be able to offer something better than what we're experiencing out in the world. Otherwise, why should one get involved? Why would you want to make changes in your life? So we have a sense that through Bhakti Yoga, through this process of association, that we have something really fabulous to offer. It's not that we're always jolly. Naturally, if I'm up here speaking, I have to smile a little bit and look as though I'm kind of happy. Otherwise, we would go nowhere. But we don't want to present a false smile, a false happiness, but something that is based in reality. The scriptures or ancient Vedic yoga texts, they explain to us that life is a mixture of many things. Matra sparsha stakuntaya sitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tams tatiksha shaspa bharata. Basically, that means that happiness and distress, which we all experience, one minute we're happy, next minute we're distressed. Then somehow or other our distress kind of moves away, and again we're kind of feeling happy, or we're somewhere in between. So this happiness and distress is like the winter and summer seasons. They come and they go. Summer's here, we're hanging on to it, and it's going to go. And winter will come and we'll think it's never going to go. That's the way it is. But then summer comes, and again winter, and we go through these different phases. Yeah. So, life as a practitioner of Bhakti Yoga is not devoid of the happiness and distress of life. Why? Because we also have bodies, we have a mind, and we have aspirations, we have disappointments. All these different things are happening no matter who we are. But one who is practiced in this process of Bhakti Yoga learns to tatiksha shasva bharata. Tatiksha means to become tolerant. And this is not very popular in the modern age. Why should we tolerate? We should not tolerate anything. Get what you want. Be driven. Be passionate. You can do it. Tolerate, that's in bygone ages for foolish people who were not educated and of modern thought. But we are taught by the ancient civilizations that if we want to be peaceful and happy, there has to be a certain amount of tolerance. Who knows the Alcoholics Anonymous prayer? If you know it, it doesn't mean you were one, you were an alcoholic. So don't worry if you have to know the prayer. Give me. Not quite, but it's, what was that one? It might be nice. Yes, is it, give me the. Is my wife around? She's gone. It's something to do with giving me the intelligence to know the things that I can change and to tolerate the things that I can't. Yes? Ring a bell? Requires some wisdom.
Accept the things I cannot change.
Yes, accept the things that I cannot change. The courage to change the things that I can change and the wisdom to know the difference between the two. What a wise person that would be. So tolerance is a natural part of an intelligent person. There are things way beyond our control. But we are interested in developing a community, relationships, which are able to connect us to happiness. And that happiness is described also in this great book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, as Brahma Sokyam. Sokyam means happiness. Brahma, Brahman means spiritual. So Brahma Sokyam means spiritual happiness, which is different from material happiness. Material happiness is very fleeting. It has a beginning and an end. Spiritual happiness begins and continues eternally. So we are after that Brahma Sokyam, or transcendental happiness, which is not overwhelmed by the fleeting changes in our life. So this is a great science. Our spiritual master, founder, Srila Prabhupada, explained in that way. This is not a religious belief per se, but it is a great science of life. How to be able to live in this world and to understand what it is that I am. What am I? Who am I? What is this manifest world? How should I live and act in this world? And what is the goal of my existence, the existence of this world? Now, the amazing thing is that most people, if we ask that question, really don't know who they are. Really. They have some idea that I'm a little girl, a little boy, or then they, 10, 20 years later, they say, oh, I'm a young man or a young woman. And 30 or 40 years after that, I'm an old man, I'm an old woman. And who are you really? Are you a little girl? Are you a young person? Are you an old-aged person? What is it that you are? Really? Oh, I don't really know. Really? And where are you going? Where is this life leading us? What is the goal of our struggle for happiness and existence? What is the goal of it? Get money, get a good job, get some friends, and but you're going to die. But let's not dwell on that. Let's just keep busy without knowing what is the goal of our existence. So this process of discussing, inquiring, learning, understanding about the goal of life brings us very quickly to the platform of Brahma Sokyam, spiritual happiness. We get joy. You know, like when you go to a party, we were at a party today, we were at a barbecue this afternoon. We don't often go to barbecues, but it was a neighborhood watch barbecue in our area, so we had said we'd go along. And we were there, and we were interacting with many different people, and it was very interesting. My mind's now gone to another subject, actually, because I'll come back to where I was going, hopefully. It was very interesting that the people right across from us, we've been living there for 5 months now, and the people right across the road from us happened to be strict vegetarians for the last 30 years. It was quite amazing. We're a lovely couple, and they were drinking apple juice, and he had some sausages on his plate, and I thought, where did you get them? He said, we brought them, they're vegetarian sausages. And we cooked them at home, we didn't cook them on the barbecue, and we brought them in foil, and they were really, really quite into what they were doing. So this idea of Brahma-sokyam, or spiritual happiness, is very much connected to higher levels of awareness and higher levels of consciousness. So vegetarianism, we were asked to speak a little bit about vegetarianism because we've just established, or just in the process of establishing, our first vegetarian club up at Massey University. Stacy and Jonna are very kindly come along this evening from Wednesday possibly, and other interactions. But we get a sense when we get into a social milieu of discussion, people like to talk about themselves. That's the connection to what I'm talking about. So this afternoon people were talking, and we actually like to talk about ourselves. If you look at social interactions, people talk and you listen, and you try to be as attentive as you can, and you wait for your turn to talk about what you've been doing, and you kind of, that's the good part, when you get to talk, and everyone else looks as though they're interested, and guess what, they're not really that interested that much. A little, but then they're waiting for their turn to talk. Yeah. So it's natural to be self-interested. We are interested in ourselves. Because we're here in this world, we don't know who we are, we don't know much at all. And we're searching, striving, desiring to be happy, to gain pleasure. So naturally we're a little self-interested. When we hear about spiritual life, we can get really excited because it introduces the concept of our real self, who we really are, and how we can really be happy. So if you tune into this for a little bit, we can get really, really inspired and enthusiastic because it's in our self-interest. And we get a sense that all this other false conceptions of life that we've placed on ourselves, thinking that that will bring us the happiness, the lasting pleasure, is not really real. It's temporary at best. Yeah? Whatever identification we place, oh, I'm married to this person, I'm going to find this person to marry and love. Hey, that's great. We have to find people we want to be with and enter into deep relationships, but it's not eternal. Yeah? They used to have films that we all used to watch if you were in my generation. God only knows, and I mean that, only God knows what's on the movies these days. But it used to be that young woman, young man would fall in love and want to live together forever in a day. Isn't it? I'll love you forever in a day. We want that. Yeah? But it's not a fact. It cannot be. The young couple wander off into the horizon and the sun's going down, but they don't stay young. They become old and he gets arthritis and a big belly and she gets whatever she gets and they die. One before the other and there's heartache and all the rest of it. So I don't want to labor the point. We could talk all night about the realities of our material existence. The point being made, though, is that we are searching so much for happiness. So this happiness is not coming just from the gratification of the body or the mind. It's not only coming from stimulation of the intellect, but it is coming from the Atma, or the real self, who is experiencing life as a child, experiencing life as a young person, experiencing life in all the stages of existence. So I'm going to read to you for a short period from this book, Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is one of the, this is the considered to be the cream of all the Vedic or Vedic texts, condensed milk and cream. So one verse in the first chapter, first canto, second chapter, 14th verse, describes the focus of a person interested in spiritual happiness. I'll read the Sanskrit. Make sure I've got the right verse. There's a lovely series of verses, actually. They're all very beautiful. It's funny, I'm tempted to read this one before because it's nearly as nice as the one coming. I'll read this one. Yadana yukta sinayukta karma granti nibandhanam chidyanti kovidas tasya kona kuryat katarutim. Translation. With sword in hand, figuratively, intelligent men and ladies cut through the binding knots of reactionary work or karma by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to this message? I'll read it once more. I'll read the verse before because it all ties in. Therefore, this is the verse previous, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotee. With sword in hand, intelligent persons cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to this message? Purport or explanation of this verse by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, the founder. The contact of the spiritual spark with material elements creates a knot which must be cut if one wants to be liberated from the actions and reactions of fruitive work. Liberation means freedom from the cycle of karma. This liberation automatically follows for one who constantly remembers the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead. This is because all the activities of the Supreme Lord are transcendental to the material energy. They are all attractive spiritual activities, and therefore constant association with the spiritual activities of the Supreme gradually spiritualizes the conditioned soul and ultimately severs the knot of material bondage. So material bondage, basically we understand, is that due to our past activities, we find ourselves in a certain set of circumstances now. And we are bound by the circumstances that we are in now, and we are conditioned by those circumstances. That binding and those circumstances check us, stop us, limit us from experiencing the Brahma Sokyam, the spiritual happiness. When we are attached to this body, as thinking of the body to be the self, we limit our ability. We restrict it to bodily pleasures. So this process of bhakti yoga is to help us go beyond the temporary identification and realign ourselves or re-identify ourselves, not just as a body, but as a spiritual person. It's interesting, at university we were talking about that. Sometimes people are saying that we're human beings wanting to have a spiritual experience, but the converse is actually more accurate, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Think about it. We're actually spiritual beings. Right now we're having a human experience. The amazing thing is you can have any one of 8 million 400,000 experiences. That's how many species of life there are. Right now, we have a human body, we identify with a human body, and we have that experience. And we think, I am a human being. That's what I am. But as I mentioned earlier, if I ask you, oh, you're a human being, what are you? Oh, I'm a little girl. Or I'm a little boy. 20 years later, I'm a young man or a young woman. We go through the different stages, identifying as a young person, a middle-aged person, an old person. The whole identification is a misidentification. I am not the body which is constantly changing. I am the eternal or the constant living being, experiencing life as a child, life as a young person, life as an old person. Now, I may take in my next birth any one of 8,400,000 species of life due to my karma. Karma means action and reaction. Whatever we do in human form of life determines our destiny for quite some time. The goal, main focus of human life is to inquire, Atato Brahma Jignasya, again Brahma, spirit, to inquire, who am I? What is this world? Why am I forced to die? I don't want to die. No, nothing I see in my experience wants to die, but everything is forced to die. Why is this? Why is everything temporary when I want it to be permanent? What is to be understood here? What is to be learned? If we use our human form for those purposes, then next life, again, we will be born as human beings to further the inquiry, to go further on this path. If we think, oh, I'm not interested in all this philosophical ideas, I just want to eat, drink, be merry, party, enjoy life, then we are refusing or abusing, yeah? The human form of life. Just like if you're given something very special, someone buys a new camera. There's a few people that I know have bought new cameras. So if you get a new camera and you don't, somebody gives it to you, say your father even buys you a camera or whatever, and they give it to you. If you use it, chances are they'll let you use it. If you abuse it, you leave it and it gets banged and bashed around, you'll lose it. They'll take it back. You're not actually using the gift that you've been given. So we have to analyze, what is the human form given for? What are we supposed to do? But if we think, let me eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. This is the activities we understand of the animal life. Animals eat. They sleep, we sleep. They mate, we mate. They defend themselves, human beings defend themselves. So what's the difference? Developed intellect. You will not see 12, 15, 20 cats and dogs coming here and sitting and listening. And the intellect is not developed to understand, to ponder. Why am I getting old? Why am I becoming an old dog? No. It's not. The developed consciousness is not there. If we do not utilize the human form in this way to inquire and to understand, to progress, we regress. We go down into lower species of life. And this is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the greatest tragedy. And in the heart of great souls, like the founder of our Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada, and great souls like that, their sadness in their heart is not their own happiness and distress in the world, getting old. They're not bothered by those things. They're tolerating. But their real sadness is to see so many living souls having come so far to human life and not utilizing it. And not getting the opportunity to utilize it. Why? Because we're living in a demonic society. Dandaya tander upayamanas. Tepeshi Tantriyam Urudam Nibata. The Bhagavatam explains to us, we are being led, we are blind, we do not know where we have to go, as I've explained. And the people that are our leaders, they do not know either. They are blind men leading other blind people. And what happens? They fall into a ditch. We need leaders who are not blind. We need knowledge that is not blind. This is the birthright of every human being, to access this knowledge and understanding and this way of life. This way of life that we can make progress and create wonderful communities. So this Bhakti Yoga community has the highest knowledge, the greatest culture. It can train us what to eat, how much we should sleep, how to mate properly, to marry and produce wonderful children, and not to be too absorbed in fighting or just defending. Yeah. I've been watching a number of documentaries recently about different things. One was about vegetarianism. We put in our recent pamphlet that we produced. Horrific what is going on. Absolutely horrific. We don't see it though. Behind the walls of slaughterhouses and places where animals are ripped to pieces. Unbelievable what is going on. And then I saw some other documentaries about breaking the silence. One Australian journalist was producing some DVD video type material. The war against terrorism. We're all manipulated by the media to think that the terrorists will get us. Sooner or later they're going to blow us up or whatever. We don't realize the society that we're living in, the different countries that we belong to, are also performing amazing acts of violence against other people all over the world in the name of a free America and fighting for freedom in different European countries and even Australia and New Zealand itself, fighting wars over in Afghanistan and Iraq and Kuwait and different countries, more and more and more. We, as a civilization, have been lulled into becoming what they call passive consumers. Everyone gets a bargain at the warehouse. And we toddle along and buy whatever it is that we have to do, and we work ourselves 5 days a week. Isn't it? This is life. We're reduced to the, generally, not, there's always exceptions, but there's a general principle, the mass of people, you have to work 5 days a week, maybe six, and then go along and get the groceries and go to the supermarket, and you might get a day or a half day or something to kind of try to relax in amongst the all, and off you go again. Being conditioned to thinking that if I can just consume enough materials, watch enough TV and get the media to brainwash me enough, and I can actually get some happiness out of all this. What a tragedy! What a tragedy! This is not human life. Human life is meant for developing our love for God, for our love for everything, for everyone and everything in this world, and for, at the end of this life, transferring ourselves beyond this cycle of birth and death through so many species of life, transferring ourselves back to our original home. So this is the goal of Bhakti Yoga, the goal of Krishna consciousness. And somewhere we have to go, we know that. We can't stay here. You can't live for more than 100 years. And we were talking the other day too. We want to prolong life. But the Bhagavatam, what is the point, right? Modern science, we're going to overcome this disease, that disease. And we should increase the duration of life from the average age of 75 or 80. It could be 90 or 100. And some scientists are saying we will go to 120 in the next 50 years by modern research. The Bhagavatam immediately discounts the whole thing. What is the use of a prolonged duration of life inexperienced by so many years in this world. If you don't get it now, whether you're 100, I don't think you're going to get it when you're 125 years old with a plastic hip and a plastic joint and a titanium knee and a pacemaker and a pumper and a whatever we're going to have to stay alive for so long in the modern age. The Bhagavatam says, what is the use of a prolonged duration of life? Inexperienced by years in this world, we have to learn from the experience of life. Mama Pecha Purna Janma Dukalaya Mashasvatam. The Bhagavad Gita explains to us, this world is a temporary place full of various miserable conditions. And those who have come to this higher level of spiritual happiness and existence never return to this material platform, having attained the Supreme. Now we may say, but oh, I don't really, that's a bit freaky. Got to leave this world and go to another world. Hey, we have to leave. We cannot stay here. The time is ticking away. It's ticking away. We move on. I spoke to one man today. He said, yes, time goes pretty quick, doesn't it, when you're getting older? I said, yeah, we're getting older, aren't we? And he was around 50, 60. I said, you should talk to my mum. She's 91. And she tells me how quick it goes. And I haven't met, when you get that old, it must really go fast. But you don't get it. Mina, you don't really understand what we're talking about. Why? How old are you, Mina? She's only 17, for goodness sake. What are they talking about? Time goes faster when you get old. So it's hard to get, isn't it? But when you get to about 50 or so, maybe 60, around 50, can't imagine it, can you? You'll also say to your kids and other people, I remember my mom and dad used to say this about time goes faster when you get older. It's ticking away just as fast for you as it is for all of us, but we don't see it. Unless we're able to break through our conditioning. And the amazing thing is, this isn't a message just for old people, but it's for 17-year-olds. Great sages in the past were 5-year-old children. And they were saying to their friends, don't waste your time simply playing. You must play. You're a child. Yes, play, but do not waste your whole life in the pursuits of this world. We have to do the things of this world. We have to eat. But eat beautiful vegetarian food that doesn't create bad karma, which will kill you. And kill you for lifetime after lifetime. You will lose your human form of life. You will go down into lower species. Don't pay the price. You think, oh, it's not so expensive. Meat's pretty, it's not that expensive. Not much more than vegetables. My God, if you knew what price you're paying to gorge yourself on the dead carcasses of blood of other creatures because you like the taste. When I used to go to the movies, they had, what was his name? The guy with the teeth? Dracula. He liked blood, and he was a demon. We used to go, he was the bad guy. He would get and bite people and suck their blood. Hey, can't you see the connection? If you're so attached to blood, then people say that. Why do you eat meat? Because I like it. I like the taste. Oh, yeah. So we have to eat, but learn to eat those things that will not hurt you. We have to sleep. I used to sleep 12 hours a day, like I'm sure many of you used to. I used to love to go to bed at 3, 4, 5 in the morning, get out there and party all night. Come back home, go to, and then, anyway, I won't get to all the details. Party all night, go home, 5 o'clock in the morning, get up in time for my soccer game, and sleep 12 hours. What else is there to do? That's far out, great, sleep as long as you want. They're not meant to sleep like that. Modern science also, medical science says, you sleep 6 to 8 hours at best. You become sharper, clearer. And look at the time you'll save. We say to people, why don't you meditate? Why don't you chant Hare Krishna? I got no time. What time do you go to bed at night? Oh, about 11, 11:30. What time do you get up? 7, 8 o'clock? I don't sleep that long. So why don't you try going to bed at 9 o'clock? Huh? 9 o'clock? Yeah, and get up around 4. You could gain 3 hours every day. But what would I do at that time? Aha! And we've heard it a million times. Early to bed, early to rise, keeps you healthy, wealthy, woo, and wise. It's the wise thing to do. An hour of sleep before midnight's worth 2 after midnight. It's all there. And where did the people get these things from? They got them from these ancient books. Deepak Chopra, Stephen Covey, all these big self-help people. It is all coming from the ancient teachings, original teachings from the Vedas, source of all knowledge. So we have to eat the right thing. We have to sleep. We don't become bears. Yeah? So the human body is meant for eating and sleeping, mating. It's all pervading. It's everywhere. Everything's geared around the mating, the attraction for the opposite sex. And we think, yes, this is what life is really for. So much eating, so much sleeping, mating, mating. Yeah? And we sometimes don't even see that. We think, oh, well, it's kind of a bit like that, but it's not all like that. But if you have a real in-depth look at the media. Every car practically has got a female. You get the female with the car. Every smoking cigarette that used to be there, you get the female and you get the male with whatever he is. Advertising is all geared into the attraction for the opposite sex. So yes, that's a natural attraction. But it is no different. The mating of the animal is no different from the mating of the human being. It's the same activity. Otherwise, why would the animals be so enthusiastic? They're just as enthusiastic to mate. Everywhere you go, you'll see. We were out the other night and you see we're walking and there's some birds doing some dance around and we're thinking, well, what are the birds doing? That's what they're doing. They're very enthusiastic. They're doing their little thing. And all the insects, you've seen the nature shows. I know when I was a kid, we used to watch the nature shows and it shows you the little insect going, woo-hoo, and moving its things. And it's the mating dance and the courting activity. It's going on. And human beings cannot mate as expertly as other species of life. The species of life where you can mate all day and people say, oh yeah, tell me about it. Rabbits, insects, pigeons, birds and so on. So the human form is only designed for a little bit of mating. Eating, you can only eat 1 or 2 plates of food. If you want to really eat, you should become an elephant. You can eat huge quantities of food, but our stomach's only small. So a little bit of eating, a little bit of mating, certain amount of sleeping, and defending. So much energy has gone into defense. We've made the world a really nice place, secure, through placing our intellect into developing weapons of mass destruction to save our world. So this is not the purpose of this developed intellect, to become bound by those animalistic, sophisticated animalistic activities. But it is meant for Atato Brahma Jignasya. What am I? Who am I? How can I connect to spiritual happiness? So, with this knowledge, intelligent persons cut through the binding knots of karma. So this knowledge is able to cut through our conditioning. I'm not a 17-year-old, I'm not a 60-year-old, I'm not a 30 or a 20, I'm not a man or a woman. I'm a spiritual entity having a human experience. Let me use that human vehicle that I have now to further develop this awareness and take myself at the end of this life beyond material existence. And this is the promise of Krishna Bhagavan. The promise of the Supreme Being is that this world is temporary, there is an eternal existence. We can learn the art, the science of how to transform. transfer ourselves back to that environment. Yeah? And it is done by remembering, or it is done by connecting to the spiritual energy. Just now we're connected completely to the material energy with the idea of gaining happiness, pleasure, etc., as we've discussed. This process means we have to now connect, plug in again to the spiritual energy. Oh, how do I do that? Okay. You learn how to eat pure vegetarian food and offer it to Krishna, or God. You say, my dear Lord, I'm not sure if you're Krishna or who you are right now, but I'm kind of thinking it might be Krishna. So God, please accept this food. It's very beautiful. Just like a child. A child is given sweets and lollies or whatever you call them by the parents. So if the child acknowledges, then it's very good. Oh, thank you, Mommy and Daddy. We're very happy. But if the child takes one of the sweets and says, Mommy, here's one for you. I want you to have one, or the father, then we're really happy. We're offering back something. Yeah? So in a similar way, when we offer our food to Krishna, He's not hungry. God is not hungry for our food. But just as a child would offer something back to a parent that supplied it. In a similar way, when we learn how to offer everything back to God, then God is very happy or very pleased. So this reconnecting is done through offering our food to Krishna by chanting the mantra. We can sing it in the shower. We can chant, as we're going to show, I think someone's going to show us maybe how to do the meditation. We have our meditation beads. We discuss about the spiritual science. And as I said earlier, it's very exciting. We like to hear about ourselves. But when we are able to hear about our real self and how we can really connect to real happiness, this is very inspiring. It's not selfish. There's a subtle difference. It's not so subtle, but it seems a bit subtle. Self-interest and selfish interest. Spiritual life, real spiritual life, is in our self-interest, but it does not harm anyone else. It doesn't deny anyone else of anything. In fact, it embellishes or helps the other persons also. Selfish interest is we're scrambling for some personal advantage. I want it, and if you don't get it, well, it's tough luck. There's not enough to go around. I've got it. That's selfish. But spiritual, having your own self-interest at heart is good for you. It's good for your best friend. It's good for the animals. It's good for the other people in other parts of the world. It's all good. And we've said many times that statement is everywhere. People say, oh, it's all good. I'm sorry, it's not. On the material platform, everything is generally not so good, to be honest, if you examine it very carefully. But we can truly say on the spiritual platform, as long as we're staying on the spiritual platform, it's all good. Whether it be happiness or distress that comes in different ways at different times, it's all good. It's all for us to learn. If it's good, we acknowledge God, thank you, my dear Lord, I'm experiencing some happiness and some good things are coming to me. If it's apparently on the material platform bad, I just cut my finger or I've just done something that's causing me pain, we acknowledge to the Lord, yes, this is me to learn that, yes, this body is temporary, is not the focus of my complete existence. And maybe due to my past karmas, my past bad activities, I should have lost my hand. I've only had a small cut, so it's okay. Okay, so I've hopefully touched on a few things that may stimulate some thoughts. I do mention sometimes that the window of spiritual vision is opened by this association. We come into the association, we chant, we hear these ideas, we have some spiritual food and good association. As soon as you walk out the front door, the world rushes in on us. Hey, I've got to get to work tomorrow. And oh, that was a good idea. But oh, yeah. And before you know it, maybe 5-10 minutes or an hour or two later, we might remember something that I've said or some little experience that you had this evening, which hopefully will bring you back into the association. So We encourage you, every one of us, to keep that window open so that we can actually see the reality distinguished from the illusions of this existence. We have some books at the book table there. Please consider taking one, because that's very important, so that at times you can look and, oh yeah, and we gain inspiration. Keep that focus. Okay, so I'm going to finish there. We've already shared Krishnendu. Everyone's had a chance. So if I could invite you just to come and introduce. We're going to do it before the last kirtan. Is that correct? Have I got it mixed?
Yeah.
So Krishnendu is going to show us how to do our personal japa meditation on beads. And then we'll have about 10 minutes kirtan. And then we'll have prasada. Thank you all very much. Is there any question? Maybe someone has something that I've pressed.